Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Today's show, we talk about a few things that lots of businesses and people around talk about. Is climate change real? Is using environmentally friendly practices in your business expensive? As Kermit the Frog said, it's not easy being green. Or is that a fallacy? Maybe it is easy being green. We're going to actually talk about that today, and we're going to unearth some myths, legends, and some true facts about sustainable business practices. And today's show is made possible by our sustainable friends at eView Real Estate. Now, we've got a number of wonderful guests today, all experts in their field, and we're looking at it from a few different angles, as I always like to do here on Taking Care of Business. And our first guest is Head of Engagement for Climate Works Australia, Adam Macher. Welcome.
Jackie, thanks for having me on your show.
Good to have you here. Now, let's talk firstly about Climate Works Australia. I'm assuming, as those listening will think, is that to do with climate change? Tell us a little bit about Climate Works Australia. What do you do?
It is. So I'm a bit of a fledgling when it comes to the Climate Works family. I've been there 18 months, but it was established in 2009. And it was a partnership between Monash University and the Myer Foundation. And we work within the Monash Sustainable Development Institute. Now, effectively, Climate Works work is an independent and expert advisor across mainly business and government. And we work to essentially accelerate the solutions to climate change. And we do that by embarking on research and analysis to look at where the best emissions reduction opportunities are for these sorts of entities, and then work with them and their stakeholder to broker those solutions and find the best ways to enable them and see them realised.
Okay, so when people question, and Trump comes to mind, and a number of other people, that climate change is a big fallacy and it's not real, how do you respond to those naysayers, doubters, sceptics?
Look, we're an evidence-led organisation, and so we defer to the... We don't work on the climate science, but we would defer to the best available evidence. And when you look at peak bodies like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and many others in every academy of sciences around the world, and pound for pound in Australia, we've got some fantastic climate scientists too, the body of evidence is irrefutable. And for something, for an issue that's under such scrutiny, and those scientists are under such scrutiny, basically, we can see that it's getting worse and worse faster and faster.
Yeah, it must have been how Galileo must have felt when he was saying, the Earth is not flat, and everyone's going, it is, and we're going to burn you at the stake, or whatever they did to him.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But it's a similar thing, isn't it? So I find it incredible, particularly the media. There are some media people in Australia who still doubt whether climate change is real or not. And I had an interesting conversation with someone in my family, and we mentioned about climate change, and they said, oh, well, I don't have to worry about that. That's not going to happen in my lifetime. And I actually said, well, it's happening now.
Yeah, so it's absolutely a here and now issue. And it's interesting the point you raise about the media, because if you were to pick up the papers on a day-to-day basis, you'd be justified in being confused about the issue.
Yes.
Whereas there's a disconnect between probably the best available evidence and what people are hearing.
Yeah, there was the Science March recently, which I thought was fantastic. And I read a sign that said, when introverts are marching, this is serious. You know, because normally the extroverts love a good march, but for the introverts are marching, it's something we should listen to.
And I think there's a real growing tension in the public space about the reason judgment we're using to make big decisions. And I think that was one reflection of that very phenomenon. And although you might not always understand the complexities and the depths of the science, you have an appreciation for the rigor at which someone uses to make their decision. And that was the expression of the fact that there's a disconnect at the moment in our large decision-making process, where there'd be government and some businesses and the what they're using to inform their decisions.
Yeah, well, scientists aren't known for their wonderful communication skills. I suppose if they had wonderful communication skills, they'd be in PR or some other area, but they're scientists, so communicating their evidence is always tricky for them. But this is where someone like you come into the fore. And I notice your title, Head of Engagement. Can you explain a little bit, like, what does engagement mean and what are you trying to do?
It's one of those tremendously nebulous titles, Jackie, that means different things on different days.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, to connect our work and particularly our research to broader audiences, and so that's a bit of a big job. And you know, we have the fortune of working with great people at Behaviour Works in the Monash Sustainable Development Institute and other good social researchers around Australia to help us make sense of the various audiences out there or the audience segments out there and what they respond to. And that's been a bit of a role. Interestingly, my background actually is in science, but my frustration was when science wasn't used to inform decisions, what were the barriers? And one of the barriers were what makes people tick, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've been blessed with good communication skills, and those listening to you will listen to this. So what are some of the key issues around engagement? Why are people not believing this? I have a view that I think that doom and gloom, there's a lot of doom and gloom messaging. You know, we see that the polar bear in Antarctica that's just bones, and we see all these very negative, upsetting images. And I think sometimes we tend to tune out, which then lessens the engagement. We go, oh, you know what, it's too hard and too upsetting to actually believe this is real. I'd rather just sort of think about rainbow and unicorns. So what is it, do you think, is one of some of the obstacles and hurdles to the resistance of belief and engagement?
Yeah, so I hope I don't misappropriate the fantastic work out there in the social science space, but some of the things we've certainly picked up that resonate with us is, I mean, one, to your point, sometimes the solutions that are offered to people aren't reflective of the magnitude of the problem.
Mm.
So take an issue like climate change, which, you know, in the newspaper looks like Armageddon. To be said the world's going to end, change a light globe, isn't psychologically proportional to people.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And so you really have to look at, and so the three things we're really picking up in the social research, one, psychological distance is a real issue. It's a fairly abstract problem sometimes. Mm. And people's connect points to it, whether they be the impacts and how local or hyperlocal they are to them, is really, really important. The other one is efficacy, whether it's self-efficacy or collective efficacy. People don't feel as though they're well-equipped to handle the problem given the grand scale.
Yes, so I'm only one person. What difference can I make to it?
Yeah. That's right. And if you look at CSIRO, we've done a lot of good work in this space. People usually either think they're doing a lot more than they really are, or they're thinking other people are doing a lot more than they really are.
Yeah. Okay, and what's the third one?
And so the third one is just around, I think climate change communications in general have been fairly homogenised. Everyone's looking for the silver bullet solution that is a great catch cry for climate change or whatever that might be. And what we're learning through our processes and one of the programs that we're running, Generation Yes, at the moment, is that people have different drivers and motivations and people respond differently to information. There's a great guy at the University of New England, Professor Don Hine, that's looked at segmentation across Australian audiences and found there are distinct differences, and that the long and the short of it is different people respond to different stimulations.
Yes,
so when you're looking at fear and guilt, I think what we're finding is that's good at getting people's attention.
Yes.
It's not always good to motivate them to act
because
what you need is to break down those barriers of efficacy and so on and so forth. And to get them to act, you know, messages of hope are actually quite stronger. They're the emotions that help us decide to act.
Yeah, well, the emotion acts as a filter for where of information and where you actually pay attention. But it's all very well to get someone's attention. Then you need to go, okay, what next? And that's where that sort of gap is, I suppose.
That's right.
And the information has traditionally been quite dense and very scientific.
Yes.
If you go and read anything and you think, oh, yeah, I'm not a scientist and I don't get it, what can I do about it? Now, speaking about what you can do, particularly from a business perspective, there's lots of things businesses can do. I know Climate Works Australia works closely with a lot of businesses. What are some of the issues that business looks for?
So the business response to climate change in Australia has been interesting. From my personal experience, both at Climate Works and prior, there's a really strong appetite from business to do more.
Great, so it's growing.
I certainly think that, and it's there's certainly been a strong intent from the business community. One of the problems in Australia, in particular, is the policy environment and the political discourse has peaked and troughed over the last few years, and it's been a highly divisive debate in Australia, and that has created uncertainty within the business community. But my personal feeling and view is the Paris Climate Agreement negotiated a couple of years ago sets a strong signal for business to act.
Okay, that's a nice way to lead us into our short break, because when we come back, we're actually going to speak to a business, an Australian business, who is working in this space. So we're going to hear from the business perspective. There's lots to talk about today. Adam Macher, you're going to be my little co-host or big co-host. For the rest of the show. I love having you here. It's a really good discussion to have. I'm glad that we're talking about it. Successful businesses don't stand still. They keep evolving. So should your business. Experience the future of enterprise technology at Byte Conference, a one-day flagship event hosted by Smart Business Solutions. The Byte Conference, be the shark, not the shark bait. Wednesday, the 10th of May at Mornington Racecourse, $150 per person, or bring the whole team or invite some clients with 10 tickets for $1,000. You can buy them online at byteconferencevictoria.com.au. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. We are certainly using some fresh eyes to look at an issue that I think needs to be talked about a lot more in business. It's about sustainable business practices is what we're talking about today, and how your business can be a bit greener but with benefits. And we're actually unearthing some myths, legends and some true facts today. And I have here my special co-host Adam Macher from Climate Works Australia, and our next guest started and runs a sustainable business, an Australian first project management and engineering procurement business model that creates a renewable energy solution so agricultural and food processing plants can turn their waste into profit. This sounds good. Co-founder of Energy 360, Samantha Lamond. Welcome.
Thanks very much, Jackie. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here too. Now, let's talk a little bit about Energy 360. I like the name of your business. You're passionate about powering up your waste. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's right. Thanks. Energy 360 was started off the back of a company called ABM Combustion, which has been in the waste gas handling business for 10 years. For example, we to work with landfill companies who put landfill gas extraction pipes onto landfills where they take off the methane that would be otherwise released into the atmosphere. And our equipment pulls the gas from the field and either burns it, we're reducing the methane from, which is 25 times more harmful to the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, reducing that down to the impact for the environment, or it also will pump the gas through to a generator where it creates electricity. We're just working on an upgrade for a big landfill site over in the western part of Melbourne, and it will power another 14,000 homes in the western part of Victoria.
This is very exciting, Sam. And so are you the only company in Australia doing this, or is any other companies in Australia doing this?
Well, this is where we saw the opportunity for to create Energy 360. There are other companies doing elements of what we do, but because we had the ABM Combustion had the experience with the actual handling of the gas, we felt that there was an opportunity within the marketplace to offer a complete solution whereby we, instead of actually working with landfill gas, we're actually taking a lot of the organic waste that goes into the landfill, so take it before it gets into the landfill, put it into a tank, create the anaerobic digestion process, which produces the methane, and capture that and create the electricity from there, but all in one, on one footprint in one space. And that can be done. It's not as large as a landfill site. I mean, a site that would produce about 1 megawatt of energy. It can be on about 100 metres by 100 metre footprint. So and so we have partnered with a European firm to provide that technology, which has been.
I was going to ask you about Europe, because now this is called biogas. Is that right? What the source of energy is that how the term, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. And it's quite big in Europe, this biogas, isn't it? So is Australia a bit behind the eight ball?
Yeah. In Europe, they have very large. They've had, in the past have had very large tariffs to support the generation of electricity. And so what they've done in Europe is because they have intensive farming practices, they're able to collect the byproduct, so the manure often, and they also grow energy crops. And so they're able to put them into these anaerobic digestion tanks and produce methane from there, which is then captured and so on, sold electricity back into the grid for quite a high price. And so Australia, because we've got two issues. We don't have the intensive agriculture that they have in Europe, and also we don't have the high prices to feed back into the grid. So we have two quite large structural differences, which has meant that the take up of this technology has been quite slow in Australia and has had some challenges.
So what challenges have you had as a business?
With developing Energy 360, we are fine because you need a fairly large amount of waste in order. You need a minimum of about 5 tons, which is it's about
a lot,
sort of 3 truckloads, yeah, if you like, a day. It's a little hard to sort of find that. So we've sort of had a little bit of trouble finding that sort of level, except for then, you know, you have food processing industries at the other end of town who have, you know, the tens of thousands of tons of waste that you require, but they need their capital for other things.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So we've had and then there's a bit of a mistrust of the technology because it's been put in bits in Australia. So
yeah, and it's new as well, isn't it? So it's people trying to get their head around it.
Yeah, Sam, it's interesting. It seems to me like a very logical thing for us to proceed in terms of some of the incentives or enablers that would help a business like yours to get going. What would you be looking for?
Well, ABM Combustion benefited from, this is the company that we're platforming Energy 360 from. ABM Combustion has, its equipment is in the waste, in the anaerobic digestion sites, plants, which was put in the very large meat processing company factories, as a result of what was called the carbon tax. So there was a lot of money around, and it was very easy to access because any company that was emitting over 25,000 tons of carbon dioxide, they had to put measures in place or they were fined. And so there was quite a lot of money to support that. And so that sort of funding really enabled these very high level, very large processes to put that sort of infrastructure in place.
And is your business Australia wide, or I know you started in Victoria? Actually, you started not far from here on the Mornington Peninsula, which is a bit of an extra bonus. But is it Australia wide or just in Victoria at the moment?
And no, the technology is available Australian wide. We were up in just to the north of Brisbane just recently, talking to poultry farmers and piggeries, offering them the solution. So there are quite a few. There's all sorts of opportunities in South Australia in particular. There are quite a few opportunities as well as in Victoria. So we can support and develop the solution from here.
It's interesting. I was looking in prep for today, not only about your business, Energy 360, but then I was interested in you as a person. I don't know, our listeners are always interested in the people that we have on here. And I went, what sort of background would Samantha have? And I thought it must be science or technical or something. And I was surprised that you're actually an accountant with a business background as well. So how did you come across this?
Well, I started working for National Mutual 100 years ago. Mm. And look, I really, really enjoyed working with the finance team. I was actually doing computers at that stage, and I found that the finance team really interesting and dynamic people, which is different to what
the perception
reputation. And so I studied accounting, and then got into. I was working for May Nicholas when they were healthcare company. And then I went on to London. I was working in a commercial real estate. But I've always maintained from a very young age an interest in recycling.
Okay.
And then from that, I think waste is the business of the future, and being able to use waste and extract value out of it. There's a huge value in a waste stream, whether it be food byproducts or waste from agriculture, waste and in wastewater. There's a huge value in that. So when the opportunity came to work for ABM Combustion, and then develop the Energy 360 business. I
grabbed it. So. Yeah. And how long have you been in business with Energy 360 for?
We set up Energy 360 3 years ago.
Right.
So but because of the scale of the plant, of the technology, it's taking us this long to get to the point where we've actually been able to amalgamate all of the technology together.
Now, with the topic of engagement, and I'm talking to Adam about as engagement manager at ClimateWorks, looking at Energy 360's engagement, obviously you'll have to develop some partnerships would be a key strategy, I would imagine, for the growth of your business. How are you going down that path? Are people listening to you and excited, or are they running away scared, or how's the response been?
Look, it's been quite good. We spent one of our key initiatives, which I think is actually putting us ahead of anybody else in the marketplace in Australia, is that we spent about 2 years working in Europe trying to establish a partner. We went to Italy, we went to Germany, and we went to the UK. To find a partner to work with us, and we've found someone, a company called Urquebit from southern Germany, and they've been in the market for 15 years. They're an owner-operated business. They've got about 60 staff, and they've installed nearly 200 of these plants of various sizes. And they were looking for a technology integrator to work with in other countries in the world, and they were quite keen to work in Australia. So they are providing the biological or chemical engineering, and we're providing the mechanical engineering. So, and then we're using the technology from ABM Combustion and to actually then produce the complete solution, which will be very robust and in many cases will be using proven technology.
Yeah. So what sort of partnerships are you looking for in the future?
So now what we need to do is we need to build on the partnerships that we have with the food processing companies and to be able to explain to them and provide them with the detail as to how the solution will be able to be applied to their company.
How has government responded to what you're doing? Are they do they like you? Do they provide you with some financial assistance or grants or some support, or is it too early for that?
We've received some very small grants that I think are sort of a bit more industry wide, but we've had a we've we've had some challenges providing getting the grants from business, but from government. But I think also that they can be very long term. So, and we need to operate in the commercial space. So we've got to make the projects sort of stack up as they are. So it's been mixed.
Yeah.
It's
one of the reasons why you're here today, talking about what you do and getting some attention and awareness with what you do. Mm-hmm. We are talking here with Samantha Lamond from Energy 360. Fascinating business. Samantha, will you hang around for the rest of the show, because I'd like to have a chat with you and Adam a bit more about engagement and some marketing and how you run your business and some of the obstacles and hurdles and some tips also for businesses, not only the corporates but small business. I know that a lot of small businesses find this a big deal or difficult to actually come up with some ideas of how they can actually save money as well as make some money out of it. So we're gonna talk about all that on the other side of this break. We are talking about a topic that certainly is the land of confusion. That was Genesis. I like that song. And the land of confusion is around sustainability in business. And there are a lot of false facts and myths and legends around it. And one in particular is that it's expensive. It's particularly for small business. People perceive it's expensive to go green or use sustainable business practices, and it's quite the opposite. So we're going to have a talk now about some tips and tricks. I am joined here by Adam Macher from Climate Works Australia and Samantha Lamond from Energy 360. Adam, how does Climate Works market themselves, or how do you engage with your key stakeholders?
Yeah, so to answer that properly, I'd sort of break it down into our audiences. So our bread and butter, if you will, has always been government and business. That's where we see we can affect the largest change in terms of emissions reduction. And I suppose within that, our hallmark approach has been to develop and deliver agenda setting research. And the research speaks for itself. In 2014, we delivered a report on decarbonising Australia's economy, and it was an economy-wide piece of research. And that's actually set the agenda for national, state-based and business and industry emissions reductions. So we use those reports as a means of ordering people's thoughts about what they can do and so on and so forth.
Well, that was an award-winning paper with Climate Works Australia. Has many award-winning papers. So if anyone wants to find out some more information, they could head to your website.
Yes, so climateworksaustralia.org.
Yeah, that's easy to find out. Samantha, in your experience, what are some of the keys to engagement? So how do you, as Energy 360, market yourself? I'd imagine the majority of it would be business-to-business type marketing. So how do you go about it?
Yeah, that's correct. We spend a lot of time talking to our clients and our prospective clients, because particularly in the areas that the food processing areas, there many people know each other, and so we can leverage the introductions there. And I think one of the biggest things that we're trying to do at the moment is to demystify the technology. Mm. So we're trying to explain the benefits and how it's been used elsewhere for years before, and so that there's an understanding that it isn't going to break down, that it can be it is reliable, that it will provide them with a full system solution.
Yeah, it's interesting. Language is important. I know, Adam, you and I have had discussions about language, and that helps towards demystifying things. When you start using big words or scientific words, most people, unless they're particularly interested in that area, tend to sort of tune out or turn off a little bit. What's some of the language that you use, particularly, say, for instance, let's talk about business. I know government and business at Climate Works are two key stakeholders. Let's talk about business. So how have you changed the language of climate change or climate action for when you're communicating with business?
So I think it actually depends on the business itself. Different businesses look at this in different ways. Some of them look at it as a risk, and so you have to frame it as a risk, and others look at it, and I imagine like Sam, as an opportunity. as an opportunity to do things better, and the framing around the two are very different. I think the more interesting foray we've had into communications over the last year is trying to connect with the broader public.
So becoming a bit more mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. And that's sort of been I suppose a 2-year-long process for the organisation to look at how we do that. What sort of motivations do we tap into with people? How do we frame them accordingly? Do different sectors like the health sector and the tourism sector respond to different means and methods? And we're certainly starting to gather up a bank of evidence and experience around some of that at the moment.
Yeah, so when Leonardo DiCaprio won his Oscar and used his that platform to talk about climate change, that was a good thing.
Well, it was helpful. So one of the bits of research that resonated with me particularly is that, I mean, one, going back to that point of psychological distance, how yes. far is it from you? It was interesting because I worked for another organisation years and years ago, and we used to talk a lot to the impacts of climate change on vulnerable communities and communities overseas and low-lying islands. And to some, you know, some people have a strong sense of responsibility, but a lot of the research I've actually seen suggests that we're best to receive information from people most like ourselves or most like our aspirations.
Yeah, because we can relate to them.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So not only the message, but the messenger is important. Now, some of your listeners listening now would have seen Leonardo quite vocal on the issue, and some of them might have a positive response, or it might create a little bit of pressure for them to think about it more. And some would actually have a negative, adverse response, thinking, what's this star doing talking about it? Now, Leonardo in his own life is it looks like he's taking all the right steps and means and methods, but there's sometimes a perception gap.
Yeah, well, it's a credibility thing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, Sam, from your perspective, are you looking at going into mainstream communications, or do you stick particularly to your business-to-business style?
Well, in order to sort of raise the discussion, I think, on what you're saying, Adam, is, you know, with about just general engagement and raising awareness, I'm using Twitter quite a bit, which I'm finding quite useful to engage all sorts of people. Actually, I've been surprised at how far reaching the use of the, for example, the hashtag renewable energy. So that's been really good. And then you know, sort of using the website and the blog to interface with people, and we're, you know, even the client, even large clients that we're speaking to, who are just operating in their food processing space, will actually mention, you know, that they've had a, you know, they've seen some information on this mainstream social media. So I think a lot of people are really looking for ways to engage with renewable energy. And as you said, Adam, before, you know, there's a strong appetite in business for climate change solutions, but people are still a bit wary of exactly how they're going to do it. It still seems as being a bit, you know, a bit of a greeny kind of concept. It's how reliable is it? Do we have the capability to do it? And that's what we're trying to communicate to our clients and to the industry, is that we're bringing in really good quality technology. We've got a lot of experience with a lot of it, and that we know how to, Energy 360 knows how to integrate it into the plant.
For those wanting to read your blog, what's the website address?
It's energy-360.com.au.
Wonderful, that's terrific. Now, I think we talked about the perception about, particularly for small business, that adopting, I suppose, is the word I'm trying to figure out, renewable practices or sustainable business practices is expensive. Now, I know, Sam, you've got some evidence here that there's been some energy savings of over 30% per annum, and I know there's energy savings in a variety of different ways. What are some tips or tricks that a small business owner could do to help them go down this sustainable path, Adam?
So I think the process starts with understanding where your emissions come from.
Mm.
So, you know, audits are a good place to get a sense of where the best opportunities are for you. And then depending on your size of your business and the capacity that you've got, or your budget to contract advice, there are the ways, means and methods to then work out the best bang for your buck in terms of your emissions reduction. But the one big opportunity we're seeing across business and industry and other sectors is in energy efficiency, and it's just one of those topics that unfortunately isn't exciting as things like renewable energy and those sorts of practices, because they're certainly sort of the flavour of the month, year and probably decade, and they do have a large contribution to make in terms of emissions reduction. But energy efficiency is a really good way, or a really good first step at reducing your energy demand ahead of exploring how you could generate your own electricity, so on and so forth.
Beautiful. That leads us nicely. Our next guest after this break knows more about clean energy and renewable energy than most people do, certainly one of the leading brains in Australia on this, and we look forward to speaking to him on the other side of this break. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. Yes, we are talking about all things green. That was Green Light by Lord. I do like that song. We are discussing sustainable business practices, and there's no one more qualified, in my humble opinion, to talk about renewable energy than our next guest. He's been in senior roles with the Alternate Technology Association as past president. He's worked at Sustainability Victoria, Hydro Tasmania, and is currently the chief executive of the Clean Energy Council. Kane Thornton, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Hi, Jackie. Good to be with you.
Nice to chat with you as always. Now, the Clean Energy Council, tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do.
Yeah, sure. We're the peak body for the clean energy industry in Australia. So I work with about 400 or 500 leading businesses that have interest in renewable energy in all sorts of forms, be it rooftop solar through to large wind farms, and also exciting new technologies like battery storage. So we really work with all of those companies and try and ensure that particularly the government policy and regulatory landscape is as supportive as it can be, so that those companies can go ahead and invest their hard-earned money into these exciting new technologies.
What are some of the hot buttons or key issues at the moment?
Yeah, it's a fascinating time in the energy sector, because there is a lot of what we call disruption occurring, and that's really our shift away from coal-fired generation towards renewables is accelerating very quickly at the moment, and that creates all sorts of challenges and plenty of opportunities. I mean, really, one of the biggest at the moment being just the government policy environment, and you know, I think we all know that our politicians have had pretty challenging times around things like carbon pricing, and indeed some of the bigger energy policy issues in this country, and so that just creates a bit of instability and a bit of uncertainty for companies that are looking to build these sorts of new projects. That's probably the biggest challenge that the industry certainly has faced over the past years, and continues to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, the government is always a little bit tricky. Now let's have a chat about business for a second, and with your membership with the Clean Energy Council, your business membership does vary from large corporates right down to small business. Is that right?
Yeah, so everything from, you know, small businesses out around regional Australia installing solar power on homes and businesses, through to, you know, big multinational corporates who you know, might manufacture wind turbines or be really very actively developing big solar farms around the country, and everything in between.
Yeah, is solar still the big thing at the moment for business, or how is wind farms, and what sort of the latest trend?
Oh, there's a real race on at the moment around the world, and indeed here in Australia, between wind and solar, and the race is really about cost and how quickly they're both coming down in cost, and which of them is lower cost than the other. So if you're building, if we're building a big solar or wind farm at the moment, those two technologies are fiercely competing in cost, and they're pretty level depending on where you are in the country. Some parts are windier, some parts are sunnier. As far as, you know, in the home, householders or businesses, then the cost of solar has just kept on coming down. And that's why we're starting to see some real increases in both the number of businesses around Australia installing solar on the roof of their warehouse or factory, and indeed we're just seeing more and more householders taking up solar because the cost keeps coming down, and indeed now very interested in battery technology as batteries are coming down in cost very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's all good news. Now, we were chatting about engagement. We have here Adam Macher from Climate Works Australia, who's head of engagement. We were talking about engaging customers and stakeholders, and there's still a bit of a gap from the business to mainstream taking up sustainable business practices. How does the Clean Energy Council combat that? Or what are some of the engagement strategies that you use?
Yeah, there's no question it's still a challenge. And, you know, despite what I just said about the cost of things like solar coming down so quickly, to a point that, you know, we think it is the most cost-effective solution for many householders and businesses, there is still a bit of a gap. And a lot of that is just about both the understanding of the technology. If you're a small business out there, then electricity probably isn't your main game, and therefore assessing and understanding a bit more about solar can be a bit of a distraction and a bit complex. We've obviously got some resources that are actually available on our website to help householders and businesses understand a bit more about these solutions and inform themselves about the questions that they should be asking. And we've also developed a retailer code of conduct, and that's really a way to differentiate the good retailers of solar power out there and to give businesses and householders a bit of confidence in choosing which retailer they will go with in making what is a pretty important decision for them about who they should select to purchase their solar system from and indeed install it.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. We'll put a link to our Facebook page for your website. Kane Thornton from the Clean Energy Council, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Jackie. Good to talk.
Yeah, always. Thanks. Bye. That's interesting, Adam Macher, isn't it, what Kane was talking about, particularly solar and wind, how there's – I didn't realise it's such a big race for both technologies at the moment, and that the price is coming down. So it's viable for a business to certainly look at that as an alternative.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have a look at our research, it sort of supports that. So if you look at the trajectories out to 2050, which we've modelled, it's solar and wind that are the larger share of the energy market.
Yeah. Samantha, have you heard of the Clean Energy Council?
I have, yeah. And I was actually looking at their website yesterday.
Oh, were you? Yeah. There you go. Would you consider becoming a member? Do you see any benefit in that?
Yes, I must say I was actually looking at it to become a member, because these organisations, you know, have quite a reach into all sorts of different areas of society and industry. And so I think that, you know, again, that as Kane said, you know, demystifying the technology, getting the engineering right is absolutely critical to getting a buy-in from the community to renewable energy.
They're those partnerships, because everyone sort of seems to be working to the same end or the same goal. It's actually sort of working together to help demystify, and that's one of the key biggest issues, isn't it?
Yeah.
Adam Macher, Head of Engagement for Climate Works Australia, thank you so much for coming in and helping me co-host this fascinating topic. I love it. What are you working on at the moment? You mentioned a campaign that you were talking about.
Yeah, so at the end of last year, we soft launched a public engagement and education effort called Generation Yes.
Yes.
And it aims to do just that, to demystify some of the fables that exist in the public discourse at the moment, and to start that educative process of engaging people and building literacy and building confidence around the issue, so people are comfortable that the solutions we're deploying are going to be good for the future.
How are you going about doing that?
We're doing a lot of stuff on social media, but we're actually getting back to the old traditional method of picking up the phone and talking to people again, and we've found it both refreshing and very, very effective.
It's powerful, isn't it? And also direct mail's another one. So thank you again. Well, we'll put some links to our website on Climate Works Australia. I know you've done
thanks,
amazing,
Jackie, and thanks for the
things.
Promotion to co-host on your show.
Yeah, no, it's always good. You're welcome back anytime. I loved having you here. Samantha Lamont, thank you so much. Energy 360. Congratulations. It's an incredible work you're doing, and it's good to hear about it, and it's good to be talking about this and knowing that these small Australian companies are starting to make a big difference and are starting to hit the world stage. And we wish you all the very best for the future of it. Please keep in touch.
Thanks very much, Jackie, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about our platform and initiative. We're trying to get industry and communities to power up your waste.
Power up your waste. I like that very much. We hope you feel a little smarter today. I certainly do. And we hope that we've demystified a little bit of the issues around sustainable business practices. We'll put a lot of information from today's show on our Facebook page. And we look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business.